sometimes you just have to go for it. Like sometimes there is mountains in front of you. You don't know what to do. You don't have the answers, but you just dive in. Like, and I say that often, you just wing it. And I feel like I've done that so much throughout this journey because this wasn't something that I had experience in.
Welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. Today is February 28th, 2023. I cannot believe we are about to be in March tomorrow. We have a really great episode today. We're talking to Tina Singh. Tina is an occupational therapist, digital content creator, mom of three, and most recently, an entrepreneur. Tina's latest adventure is being the founder of Bold Helmets, which is a company that makes helmets for sick kids in mind to accommodate their hair. So Tina comes from a Sikh background and her family follows Sikh practices, including her children wearing cloth coverings on their heads. And so she basically created this solution after struggling for years to find helmets that would fit her kids. So in today's episode, we learn about Tina's background. Tina is also a YouTuber, so we talked about her YouTube channel. And then we delve into her journey of creating Bold Helmets, the highs, the lows, the imposter syndrome, how she handled some of the public criticism and feedback and advice that she has for other budding entrepreneurs. So with that being said, here's Tina. Hi, Tina. So I know you literally have like a bajillion things going on right now. So I really appreciate you taking the time to record this podcast with us. Before we dive into Bold Helmets and your journey, I'd love for you to share what life was like growing up in Canada as a young Punjabi girl. Tell us your background.
Yeah, so I feel like all you know is all you know, right? So my experience growing up here is that, like, I grew up as a Canadian. I think I had a pretty typical, like, Canadian childhood, with the exception of realizing that maybe you're different than other people, right? When you're a kid, you feel like everyone else until you realize, you're like, wait a minute, I don't eat pot roast and vegetables for dinner every day. That's different. You know, that's not something I do. And so my experience in terms of the activities I participated in and the friends I had was very much reflective of the Canadian life you would see now. And I think that, you know, being an older sister as well, my sister is 6 years younger than me. I think, you know, growing up here is a completely different experience. And so I often meet people who were born and raised in another part of the world. And I feel like childhood experiences are so different. But I would say we had a pretty typical childhood.
Did your parents immigrate to Canada before you were born?
Yeah, I was born in Canada. So my parents, like my mom was in Canada for at least a year before I was born, maybe two.
Got it. And so I know you went to school for occupational therapy in terms of your education. Was that something you had always wanted to do, or was that something you got like an extra push from your parents on? What drove you to pursue occupational therapy?
Let me start by saying that my parents had no idea what occupational therapy was, right? So it's like not like my parents were pushing me to do that. So I did my undergrad in psychology. And then really, when I was growing up, I think there were so many professions I wanted. The very first was I wanted to be a dancer. That was my number one profession. That's what I wanted to do. So I think I've changed what I wanted to do several times throughout my life. I went between, wanting to do something in the arts, to wanting to be a lawyer, to wanting, you know, before I became an occupational therapist or decided to go do my master's in occupational therapy, I actually wanted to do clinical psychology. So I wanted to stick in the field of psychology and mental health and all that. And so that's something I had a real passion for. And then after I started working at a company that offered rehab for people in different areas of their life or for different reasons, they had physio there, occupational therapy there, speech there. I got to experience all those professions. And I think that's when I fell in love with occupational therapy, was when I actually had some work experience in that space.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so are you still working as an OT or have you taken a break?
So right now I've switched more to a non-clinical role, right? With more of the work I'm doing now that we'll talk about later, I'm sure. But before that, I was still doing client-based work and still assessments and treatments in the community. That's the area I've worked in.
Got it. And then one more thing before we talk about Bold Helmets. I know you have a YouTube channel that's been up and running for years. You have a pretty large following, over 80,000 subscribers. I watched a bunch of your videos and I love them. I'm curious, what inspired you to start that YouTube channel?
So YouTube is kind of a strange story. I started when my youngest son was only like 3 months old, right? So I was a mom of three. I had three kids home for that entire year. And time was just like slipping by. And we had no pictures where I was in them or wasn't documenting anything. Because when you have three kids close together, or even one kid for that matter, the time just slips away because you're so busy doing the day-to-day life that you don't take time to really document that or enjoy that or have that. And so part of the reason of starting the YouTube channel was to create this video journal of my kids growing up. And I'm very happy to say that, forget everything else that's come out of that YouTube channel, that is probably the best thing that's come out of it, that my kids can go back and look at, you know, January 2016, what were we doing, right? So it's been, I'm very happy at the end of it, like at the end of making that effort to do those vlogs. Thinking back to it now, I don't know how I did it. Like, I had a 3-month-old baby and two other kids. Like, I don't know how I managed it, but it was a creative outlet and something I didn't have at the time. And so, I don't know, I plowed through.
No, I love that, because I think back in the day, our parents had home videos, they had physical photo albums. And I think there's something so special about like sitting down on a couch and actually flipping through a photo album or watching an actual home video. And I think that kind of documentation of memories has been kind of lost in our world today because everything is just on our iPhone, right?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't have the same kind of specialness to it. So I don't know. That's exactly what I was thinking when I was browsing your YouTube channel. Like, wow, this is so cool that you have all these amazing memories and milestones documented of your kids in this really fun way that both them and you can look back on forever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on that. There is something very different about having a physical photo album, videos to look at. There's something really, really special about that.
Yeah, totally. How many hours would you say you dedicate to YouTube on a weekly basis when you're talking about filming, editing, uploading, and all of that?
So if we're talking about now things are really different. So back in the day, I used to do so many videos. I used to record, edit, upload everything myself. Now things have kind of changed for me. I do one video a week now. And so I've really cut down. And for me, I would say the total time I spend filming is probably 1 to 2 hours. And then I have an editor now who does that for me, but then plus the upload and everything. So it's still probably at least 2 to 3 hours a week, because the time it takes to upload and then promote your video and all that, that's still something I'm doing. But just the editing piece, I was able to outsource.
Got it. And were you able to leverage the YouTube community to get feedback as you were building Bold Helmets, or was that something completely independent?
It was completely independent. So I didn't share my project. Like I did, you know, call to the fact that I was working on a passion project and something I was spending a lot of time on, and the reason why I cut down from like two videos down to one video. But I didn't share the project until it was ready. Like I didn't share the project until I shared it publicly across the board. I didn't wait to get feedback on that channel. It was just, when it comes to products like this, I think there's a whole legal side to things. There's a whole development process to things. And so it's not something I shared on social until it was like ready to go.
Hey everyone, quick break here. So on this pod, we love supporting South Asian owned businesses. So I'm excited to share with you all about Mudita Earth. Mudita Earth is a botanical-based skincare line for melanin-rich skin that provides effective anti-aging solutions. In Sanskrit, Mudita means finding joy in uplifting others. Founded by a South Asian immigrant mother and her daughter, the duo hopes to bring joy by making clean beauty accessible to women of color so they don't have to rely on toxic beauty products to feel good about their skin. With all natural ingredients, Mudita Earth products give your skin that ultra-smooth, glowing finish. Go to MuditaEarth.com, that's MuditaEarth.com, and use code BROWNGIRL20 for 20% off their products. And now back to our episode. Yeah, that makes sense. So let's dive into Bold Helmets. Tell us about Bold Helmets, what it is, and what exactly inspired you to want to build this company.
Okay, so Bold Helmets, it came from my experience as a parent, 100%. I have three boys, and they follow the Sikh tradition, Sikh religion. They keep their hair, and they wear a small cloth covering called a patka. And so when I went to go put bike helmets on them after they turned about the age of five, the helmets wouldn't sit right. Like the helmets would sit kind of high because they had this bun on the top. And so the helmet couldn't sit flat against their head or forehead. And so after struggling with this and trying to like cut foam out of the helmet, and like, you know, some people go as far as cutting a hole in the helmet, all things that in hindsight I wouldn't do again, but at the time we made do with what we had. So it's just that experience and knowing that there's so many kids like mine, and if they're going to wear a helmet, it should at least fit properly in order to do its job. And now kind of a backstory to this is my years in occupational therapy, I spent working in acquired head and brain injury. And so the importance of the helmet was not lost on me. And so I never let my kids engage in bike riding or going skateboarding or the skate park, anything like that without a helmet. And so we tried to tie their hair differently and do all those things. And eventually we realized that this is just getting harder and it's not going to work much longer. We need to find a better solution.
Mm-hmm. And so just to educate our audience and myself, for those who don't come from a Sikh background, what is the difference between a patka and a turban?
So a patka is a small cloth covering. So it might be, so think of something a little bit bigger than like a bandana. It's not tied like a bandana, but that's like how big it would be, maybe double the size of a bandana. Whereas a turban can be like 6, 8, 9 meters of fabric that's wrapped around. And so that is very different. And so when I talk about, oh, the media got it confused, it's like, it, even in your head, you can imagine, like, you would never be able to fit any type of helmet over a turban. And even if you tried, no two people's turban is the same. It doesn't work like that. And so, like, I think we have a real opportunity to educate here as well. And, you know, honestly, I wish more people took that opportunity in our community to share the differences. So yeah, that's really what it is. It's just how much fabric it is.
Got it. So is it common for kids, like young boys, to wear patkas and then perhaps transition to a proper, or not proper, but to a full turban as they age?
So that's exactly it. So I think that's one of the arguments against my helmet, to be honest. Like, some people feel that you should just be teaching your kids to tie a full turban. It's not something that works in my family. I live in a community where my kids go to school with hundreds of other kids who have top knots and patkas, and I think one wears a full turban, right? So it depends on the age of your children and what works for your family, right? Like, if someone says, I want my kid wearing a full turban, I don't want them wearing a helmet, more power to you. This helmet is not to convince other people to use it. This helmet is, you got kids like mine and they're already wearing helmets, but they're just not fitting them. They're not doing their job. And so we just want to make an option for those kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was super helpful. So when you were in the brainstorming phases of this project, how were you fitting this into your lifestyle? Was it like, hey, I'm going to go drop the kids off and then spend 2 hours working on this passion project every morning? You know, how did you go about prioritizing and spending that time in the beginning and fitting it into your life to do the research and the brainstorming and all of that?
So one thing I will point out about this is it was a long process. Like, this is not something that was done in 6 months or a year. This was like 2.5 years minimum, maybe even a little bit more. And I think I took my time with it. Now, because, you know, it was like the height of pandemic too, right? Like, a lot of people were offering me the option to work virtually. And so I was able to, you know, connect with engineers and do all that thing virtually where I wouldn't have had that opportunity before, especially like, you know, being busy with my three kids. And so I think I didn't have a set schedule. I was just working on it when I could. And I think, and I'm sure that you can relate to this, when you have a passion for something, you find the time and you make the time to get it done. It might take you longer and it might go slower, but you can get it done. And so I didn't have any set schedule. I didn't have a timeline to get it done in there.
Mm-hmm. So your product is out now, right? It's available for people to order, or at least pre-order. Can you walk us through at a high level, what were all the main, you know, big steps involved to bring this concept to life, from the initial engineering and design meetings and testings and approval and all of that?
So originally I spent a couple of months just researching on my own. And then after I did that, that's when I made the first step of like, okay, I know, before I contacted anyone else, I knew what I wanted the product to look like. Like, I'd done my research, I knew what was involved, and I had an idea of what shape I wanted it to look like. To me and my husband, it just made sense that it follows the natural curve of our kid's head when they have a patka on or when they have their top knot or whatever. And so we knew what it wanted to look like, but then we reached out to an engineer to actually draw out that design for us because we needed, you know, a CAD file or a blueprint in order to move this project any further. And so once we worked with an engineer and had a design we thought we liked, then we went to a manufacturer who had experience in producing bicycle helmets for North America and also testing. And so they had had their products tested in the past. And so they knew sort of what was involved in that process. And so one of the big changes we did make early on was that our original design had no foam where the dome portion was on the helmet. There's no foam inside. And my reasoning was that if you've got an inch or two of hair, that's actually thicker than the foam that's in it. Why do we need foam there? And so as we went through the process, we learned that, no, if we keep the design this way, in testing, when they drop an anvil on the top of the helmet, it's going to crack and it's not going to meet the mark for safety standards. So that's when we went and we decided to change the internal foam to follow the curve that we had there, the dome shape that we had on the top of the helmet. And after that is when we sent it for testing. And then once we got that green light is when we started production.
So you started working on this before the pandemic. And then once the pandemic hit, you were still able to move things along because everyone basically just switched to having everything be virtual, like all of your meetings were virtual. So did you find that the pandemic kind of helped you because now you weren't having to travel and get on flights to attend these meetings?
Yeah. So by the time I had done my own independent research and I was reaching out to people, it was already, you know, people were already doing everything virtually. So that actually made it easier for me. And I know you don't hear a lot of business people say that, but that actually made things easier for me at that phase of this journey.
Right. So let's talk about funding, because I heard you mention in a different interview that this is completely self-funded right now. So I'm curious why you decided against seeking out funding.
So there's a couple of reasons. The first is that it's easier to self-fund. If I had the option to self-fund, because I didn't have to wait for anything, I could just move forward with whatever decision I felt was right. That's part of it. The second thing is I had a fear of not being able to get to the end of this. Like, as soon as I committed to working with an engineer to get the initial design, I knew I was in it, because every process, every stage of this is very expensive, very long. I knew I was already committed. But I also knew that there could be a chance at the end of this, I don't have something that passes CPSC testing. Like, I knew that that was a possibility. And so I didn't want to take on funding because I felt unsure of how that was going to go, if that makes sense. Like, I know that there's a lot of people, they have an idea, they go and they seek out funding to take that idea off the ground. But because I had the opportunity to self-fund it, I didn't do that because I felt more in control as to what was happening and more just responsible to myself as to how things went and not so much other people.
Right. Do you think you'd be open to going in the funding route in the future?
Yeah. So after this first batch of helmets, so our first batch is on the water on its way to us. And so now that I'm at this point, now going forward, this is something I might consider as I work on future products and, you know, other things in this space, which I am doing. So as I'm doing that, now is a time where I feel better about it. And I think every company, every business has their own right time in the way they do things. And it just didn't feel right for me then.
Yeah. So speaking of that, the sense of like uncertainty and the fear that you had of like, oh, maybe this product won't actually come to life. Obviously, being a helmet expert and inventor isn't really your background. So how did you kind of deal with the imposter syndrome? I've seen you mention imposter syndrome on your socials a handful of times. So I'd love to just hear you talk about how imposter syndrome has shown up in your life throughout this journey and how you've kind of managed through it.
So imposter syndrome is like something I've got with me all the time, like long time, like long term, right? It's not a new thing. It's not just with this project. Like, I think that part of this has to do with us being South Asian women as well. Like, I think part of it is our upbringing and part of it is how we've been taught to be and how you're expected to be, that when you get this attention put on you, you know, and in my case, the majority of it was very positive attention. But when you have this attention put on you for anything in a positive light, it's very hard to accept that as something you've done or something that you've achieved or, you know, something you should celebrate. And I think that's just part of my learning journey. I'm still struggling with it. I don't think I have any solutions. I will say that I have wonderful friends and people in my life who remind me to celebrate those successes and, you know, and tell me that you deserve this, that you did this. But I'm always like, you know, I don't know, did I really, or always waiting for like the other shoe to drop, or you've made a mistake. And so that's just a part of, that's just a part of my journey. And so I have no answers. I just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think the more I learn about imposter syndrome, the more I talk to people who've experienced it, the more I realize how common it is. You know, I think the internet can make it really easy for us to see other people who are doing cool things and think, oh, wow, they're so confident, they're so smart, they're so this, they're so that, when in reality, they probably struggle with the same kind of insecurities and fears and doubts that you do as well, or that, you know, we all do. And I think, like, personally, I've been experiencing imposter syndrome for literally forever. But at the same time, like, 10 to 15 years ago, I didn't even know that it was called imposter syndrome, right? Like, we didn't have the words for it. And I think the more I just talk to people and have these kinds of conversations on podcasts and things like that, the more I realize, oh, wow, this is actually something that everyone experiences. I listened to Jay Shetty's podcast, and there was this one where he was talking about imposter syndrome. And he basically said that he has felt imposter syndrome every time he's done something new. And that if he's not feeling imposter syndrome, that means that he's not growing and not being stretched as a person. And I think hearing that almost just like validated to me my own feelings of imposter syndrome. And it kind of helped me shift my views on seeing it as, oh, maybe this is a good thing, and to kind of embrace it and just lean into it, rather than seeing it as, oh, I'm just this, you know, doubtful, anxious person.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it. I'll have to listen to that episode. It's true. It's only when you've done something new, you've done something different outside of your comfort zone, that you feel that, right? Because I'm trying to think back to my time, you know, doing full-time clinical OT. And there was times where certain groups would be like, oh, we only want to refer to Tina. I never felt like they got that wrong. They can't be talking about me. I was like, yeah, I'm really great at my job. Right? That's how I would feel, right? So I don't remember having this feeling there. And you mean, this is to a much greater level, right? Just because the media attention has been so much greater. But that's a really interesting way to look at it. And I think you're right. Like, imposter syndrome is just a part of our life. And I think everyone feels it.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, you founded this company to solve a problem that you were seeing. Given, again, that this isn't exactly your background, what were some of the things that you did to educate yourself? You know, what were some of the resources that were really instrumental to you in getting this off the ground?
So when it comes to the actual helmet itself, the research was Google. Like, research was looking at other products on the market, learning about safety standards, learning about all that. And I learned that all on my own. I wish I had help with that. Like, if I was to give anyone a piece of advice, find a mentor in your space. There's just not that many independent people making helmets. They're all big companies that make them. And there's a really good reason for that, which I will go into detail one day on. But it's just very difficult as an independent person to do this kind of task. And so I wasn't able to find a mentor. But I think that one of the things, you know, that I would do differently is just really try to find more people to help me in this space. When it comes to the business side of things, I have a lot of friends who have done really well with their businesses, started new startups and done amazing things. And they've been here to support me on the business end of things from the beginning. And they're people who owe me nothing, just help me because I'm a woman in this space trying to do something and they want to help me. And I think that that's been a real wonderful part of this journey, because we often hear about women feeling like there's not space for everyone, but this experience has showed me that there's space for everyone, and that if you look and if you ask, there are people who are willing to help you. And so I've really called on my support system and the people I know in my life, and met a lot of new people as well who have all helped along the way.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really awesome to hear. One thing I wanted to ask about also was, I think literally the day I discovered you on social media was the day that you had changed the name of the company from Seek Helmets to Bold Helmets. And so I didn't quite get the backstory, but what drove the name change? Because I know that was pretty recent.
Yeah, so we ended up doing that, I think, about almost a week after the media went really big with the story. We had announced our project early in December, but when the media took to it, that's when it got a lot more attention. So basically what happened is, we got some feedback from the sick community, and there's people who felt like by naming it Sick Helmets, we're creating this idea that the entire sick community endorses this product. And we're very well aware that there are some members of our community who don't endorse this product. You know, there are certain members of the sick community that feel that you shouldn't put anything on top of a patka or the star. And I think part of this issue came from the media calling it a turban-friendly helmet, because it's not. That's not what it was ever meant to do. It was only meant for kids, and it was only meant to cover a patka, not a full turban. So just a small cloth covering. And so there was some confusion there. And so I took the feedback. I sat back. I was in Mexico when I made this decision. Like, you know, things were kind of crazy on the media front here. And then as I was away, I just kind of stepped away from the media a little bit. And I thought about some of the feedback, and I thought about how I felt about it. And then I decided that I recognize the sick population that feels that they fought really hard for the rights for their turban to be acknowledged and all of that. And so I felt good about doing a pivot with the name. That's really what happened. Like, no one forced me to do it. I didn't have to do it. It felt like, okay, this feedback makes sense to me, and I'm going to do something about it, right? And so it was early on. I decided to pivot. And honestly, I felt so much lighter, and I felt so much better once I made that pivot, because I felt good about that decision, right? So before, yeah, I felt very stressed out about it. Like, oh, like, I'm getting some of this feedback, but what do we think? Because that was never the intention behind the name, is to make people assume that everyone endorsed it. Like, not everyone endorses a product just because it has a name of a country or religion or anything behind it, right? But I recognize that feedback, and I recognize the value in that feedback that I got, and decided to make a pivot. And Bold Helmets, if I can tell you honestly, bold was my word for 2023. I never do resolutions. I never do any of that stuff. But this year, for the first time, I tried to find a word for 2023. And for 2023, I labeled it bold. And then when I had to change the name, I was like, I feel like this is perfect. Be bold in your identity, and be bold in the activities you want to pursue and what it is you want to do. And so it fit just perfectly. And so I think that's another reason I felt good about the pivot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's interesting because I think criticism and feedback, especially when it's in a public forum, it's almost like a catch-22. You know, like, there's going to be people on one side who feel whatever about XYZ. And so even if you make a decision that addresses their XYZ concern, then you have the other group of people who are like, no, this is actually not an issue. You should have stuck with your choice. And so, like you said, at the end of the day, I think what's most important is that you're making the choice that you feel the most content with, and that allows you to just be able to sleep and be happy about it.
You can't make the entire internet happy. You can't make the entire world happy. And I know that there were people who were disappointed, not upset, but disappointed when I changed the name, because they really loved it. People asking, you know, if they can still get product branded with the original branding, right? Like, that's a real thing. And so our whole first batch of product has the original branding, because it was already in production and already, like, shipping to us. And so it's going to be a little bit of a slow transition, but we've already made moves to make that happen. And so, yeah, you can't make everyone happy. At the end of the day, you have to feel good about the decision that you made. And I feel good about this decision.
Yeah. So who all is involved in the operations, like, behind the scenes? Is it just you? Do you have a team? Is your family involved?
So it's just me and my family. So my husband is an engineer by profession. So he is a computer engineer. He has been involved from the beginning. And I laugh sometimes because I'm like, I feel like my face is all over the media, but he had such an instrumental part of this whole thing. So he helped with the entire process from beginning to end, helped reviewed all the, you know, I did the research. Then when it came to design, you know, he helped, and we worked on all the designing and all that kind of stuff together. And so now he's doing his day job and I'm focused on this. And so we're, you know, divide and conquer right now. And so it's kind of my full-time, more than full-time job right now. And he's still coming in part-time to help. That's how I'd describe it.
Got it. Obviously, you're juggling a lot on your plate. How are you taking care of your mental health? Like, what are some of the things that you're doing to avoid burnout and care for your mental space?
I love that you're asking me this question today. So today on Instagram, I shared a Instagram story right in the morning saying, I know when I need to ask for help. And I asked for recommendations for a psychotherapist who is maybe in my area or community, because I feel like I'm becoming very overwhelmed with things easily. And part of that is because it's all new for me, right? This is not something I've ever done before. And then part of it is I feel like my, you know, my nervous system is like really responding in a very big way to a lot of things that are happening. And so I think, you know, how am I managing my mental health? I don't think I've done a great job of it. I'm very honest about it on social. And that does feel like a way to not only connect with people, but to show that it's okay to say that you're struggling in some of those areas. The whole time I was in Mexico, I shared. I'm like, I cried every day that I was in Mexico because it was in the height of the media. There was like so much stuff going on and I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't have answers. And so I feel like I struggled a bit. Now, as we're coming towards, now that we're in February, I feel a little bit better, better enough that I can say that I need help to manage these things going forward. And so I think that the way I'm managing is trying to be able to step back from social because I think you need that. Social media is not real life, but we keep, you know, we keep going back there, right? And we see what people say about us, positive or negative. And I think sometimes you need to step away and just do real life things, I call them. This morning, after I posted that story, I had to go to Costco. Like I had to go shopping. I had to get groceries. I had to, you know, do all these things. And so I focused on real life things because that helps keep me grounded and remembering that there is a life outside of social media, outside of business, outside of everything else. And that's my life with my family, which is of the utmost importance to me. And so I think how I can best describe managing my mental health is taking time away from social media, recognizing when I need help and knowing when I need to step away.
Yeah, that's really great to hear that you're cognizant of it. So I had actually listened to a different interview that you were on and I heard you talk about outsourcing certain things as well, whether it's housekeeping or having cleaners come or whatever, and how that's alleviated things off of your plate. And I also really appreciated one thing that you said, and I wrote that down, was how women often get flack for hiring help, whether it's to clean the house or, you know, outsourcing roles that have been traditionally gendered for women. But no one bats an eye when we talk about hiring someone to mow the lawn. And I thought that was such a great analogy because it's so true.
It's true. We think about when people hire a nanny or someone for childcare, they get flack for that. But when you hire, like, you don't think twice about hiring like a basketball coach, or you don't think twice about outsourcing like plumbing, right? But yeah, there's a problem if you're outsourcing like laundry. Right. So it's been a double standard. And I think we need to recognize that. I have, anyone who follows me on social probably knows this, but I have a very supportive partner. I say often that he is the nicest human that I know. And so he doesn't see things that way. He doesn't see things as, you know, we need to divide things or we can't outsource things. It's like whatever we can afford to outsource that fits within what we can do so we can work more on this project is perfect. And even if I wasn't working on this project, if I had the ability to, I would.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then I guess last question is, what kind of advice do you have for someone who maybe has an idea but has what feels like mountains in front of them? What advice do you have for someone who may have an idea but hasn't taken that first step?
So I will say that I had mountains in front of me and it took me a long time to start. That's the truth. I had this idea. I spoke to my husband about it 5 years ago. And then for 2 years, I did nothing. Right. So it's because like, I was busy. My kids were young. I didn't know what to do. Like, you know, there's a lot of reasons. So if you have an idea, my advice is to first research what's out there that's similar to what you're doing, or research what's involved in it. And I think, you know, like I mentioned earlier, getting a mentor in the space of what you're trying to do is extremely helpful. They can help you preview what it's going to look like or what it might be like for you to go down that route. Right. And I think that's really helpful. The other thing I will say is, sometimes you just have to go for it. Like sometimes there is mountains in front of you. You don't know what to do. You don't have the answers, but you just dive in. Like, and I say that often, you just wingy it. And I feel like I've done that so much throughout this journey because this wasn't something that I had experience in it. Like sometimes you just have to wing it. And finally, I will say, you're not too old and it's not too late. I say this as a 40-year-old mom of three, you're not too old and it's not too late, because we always feel like it's going to be so much work. We never know if we're going to get to the end of it, but you don't know till you try. And if you're passionate enough about something, it's worth it. Try, get a mentor, learn more. If you get a mentor or you look into the process and you decide this is just something I can't or don't want to go forward with, that's okay. But don't leave it without trying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that first step is always the hardest step, right? Like once you take that first step, then you have momentum to carry you on to take that second step and the third step, and everything after becomes a little bit easier. Love that. What is next for Bold Helmets? Like, I know you have a round of helmets that are currently in transit, but are there any plans to expand that you can share with us?
Yeah, so we've started our work on a hockey option. And so hockey is like, we're Canadian. Hockey is a big thing here, and hockey has long been a pain point for a lot of sick families, especially the ones in my community whose kids play. And, you know, maybe they're 8 or 9 now, but like, you know, in the next 2-3 years, it's going to be, you know, a bigger issue for them. It's a sport where a helmet is mandated. And so we've started the work in that space, and there's been a lot of demand for that. So I'm really excited to see that take shape.
Tina, I really loved hearing your story and having you on the podcast today. Tell us where people can find you, connect with you, and how people can order Bold Helmet.
Okay, so yeah, people can find me over on Instagram and on YouTube and all the places. My handle is TheTinaSing everywhere. You can find me. If you're interested in Bold Helmets, the handle for that on every platform is also Bold Helmets, B-O-L-D Helmets. If you want more information on the product, you can visit our website at www.boldhelmets.com. I will also say that the helmets are designed for kids who are 5 and up and currently come in one size. We are hoping to have more one day soon, but that's the current offering. And you can get all the information you need in terms of fit and all that kind of stuff on our site.
Cool. We will go ahead and link all of that in the show notes. Thank you, Tina.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at @thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.